Blog Talk Radio.
Hello. Science Labyrinth. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the backyard. This is Margaret, your host, and I am very, very excited to welcome you to the backyard this evening. I hope you have selected your favorite chair and you are in the mood to lavish. You could have your favorite drink of coconut water, rum and coconut, whatever. You just pretend that you're on the beautiful island of Jamaica, like you used to do when you were growing up, perhaps, on your veranda, in the backyard, on the beach, in a hammock. Oh, those beautiful days. Well, welcome again. This is Margaret, and you know how I like to play and pretend, because we love our island so much. And I am so excited and thrilled this evening because I am going to be welcoming a foreigner who loves Jamaica too. And we know there are lots of them out there. But this is a very special one because not only does he love Jamaica, but he has a Jamaican wife. So I'm going to call him a Canadian. I have to come up with some nice word for him, because he has my passion, which is a love for history. So if you are on my mailing list, I'm sure you got the promo about the marvelous book that Ken has written for us. It's really a gift and a treasure. And the title is Portland, the Other Jamaica. And I'm sure our listeners will remember that some time ago we featured Portland when we were doing Discover Jamaica One Parish at a Time. We featured the Holly Myth. We featured the Errol Flynn Gang. So we really have been focusing on Portland. And here, out of the clear blue sky, I have the honor this evening of presenting you the author of this wonderful book who we stumbled on each other, I would say. But, you know, as I know, when you are focused on something, the universe brings it into your consciousness or into your energy field. So I want to welcome Mr. Ken Roche, and I hope I'm pronouncing his name right. I think he has a French name, but he's an author. This book is the second book that he has penned. If you got my promotion, you know that he's been married to his Jamaican wife for 35 years. They met in Toronto, and they now live in British Columbia. And I am just so excited. I'm going to open up the mic. I see that Ken is with us already. And we have so much to talk about our love and passion for Jamaica, number one, and his particular love for Portland and his intriguing story, bringing to life all the wonderful features of Portland, the other Jamaica. So without any further ado, I am going to open up the mic. But before I do that, I would like to encourage our listeners. I gave you the title already. So if you did not Google it or go to the website when you got the promo, now here is your chance. Because when you type in www.portlandtheotherjamaica.com, you will see the cover of Ken's book. And on the cover, there are six photographs of six people. And Ken has graciously announced to me earlier that the first person to identify these six characters, and I imagine they're among the schemers and what were the title again? I'll open up and let Ken tell us. You're going to have a copy of his book. So, of course, you know that when you want to for me to open the mic, you hit 1 on your telephone dial, then I'll see you raising your hands like you were in school in the old days, and I'll open up the mic to you. So I'm going to open up the mic to Ken, and then we're going to see which caller can identify the six characters in the book and raise their hands too. So hello, Ken.
Hello, Margaret. Thank you for having me on your program.
You're most welcome. As you can hear in my voice, I'm quite excited.
I found someone
who loves history as much as me, and perhaps more, and also loves Jamaica.
Indeed. And I was going to say the six characters, as you call them on the front of the book, are the dreamers, schemers, and crusaders, or some of them, who left their imprint on Portland over the last 400 years.
Wow.
It'll be interesting to see who can come up with the names, all six names.
All right. Well, I'm going to be waiting for that raised hand, so I'll tell you when it is. I see a few people on the board, some Skyping in. I never know where people are Skyping in from. And I've always asked the Skypers sometimes to hit 1 to let me see what happened, because it comes up as all ones on my switchboard.
Right.
We have callers from 718, no raised hands yet. So, and I want to welcome the people who may be listening online and to remind you that if you want to interact with the Labrish, you will dial in at 1-718-766-4558. So we really want you to join in. And now I'm going to open up the mic to Ken. So, Ken, it's my pleasure having you, as I mentioned before, and I'm sure all my listeners will be thrilled. A lot of them come by later to listen to the show. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, as you mentioned previously, my first effort at publishing was the history of my neighborhood in Canada, Fairfield, which is a neighborhood in Victoria, British Columbia. I grew up here. And it's a beautiful part of Canada. It's what I call it's the Mandeville of Canada. It's just
a
small city, unique, kind of off to one side on the Pacific coast. I went to school here, grew up here, moved away to go to university, spent about 12 years tramping around the world, ended up in Toronto where I met my wife, and eventually we made our way back to Victoria.
Wow.
Spent many years working as a government bureaucrat, and then in my latter years discovered a curiosity about history, and started off by digging around and finding out about the history of the neighborhood I live in. Fairfield has, interestingly enough, a population about the same size as Port Antonio, 14,000 people.
Wow.
And I plowed away at that and decided that it was appropriate to try and take my research and turn it into a book, which I'm the publisher, the author, and the marketing department. That was 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It was
What's the title?
A Fairfield History.
Wow. Very good. Excellent.
And then from that point on, I was trolling around for other projects to work on, hopefully getting other people involved in the writing. And in due course, 5 years later, ended up in Portland.
Wow. So I just thought that you wrote something about your hometown, and you wanted to write something about your wife's country.
Well, yes and no. I mean, Hyacinth and I have been going to Jamaica, as you mentioned, for the last 35 years. She's from the Dry Harbor Mountains up above Brownstown. We always go and visit her auntie there and visit friends in Portmore, family in Portmore, and friends throughout the country. But Portland is a place that's always drawn our attention, and we always try to make a point of visiting Portland.
I wondered if she went there as a child. I don't even remember how far away St. Anne, you said she's from? Is from Port Antonio or Portland.
Today, the drive from her place above Brownstown to Port Antonio would probably be about a 3 to 4 hour drive.
Oh, I see. Well, you know, I grew up in Kingston. And my first trip to Port Antonio was when I was perhaps 10. I went on a camping trip there with the YWCA, I think. And then I went back there when I got married in 1957.
All right.
I was so impressed with it then that that's where I wanted to spend my honeymoon.
All right. Yeah.
And that those were the only two times that I went back, that I have been there. You know, there are lots of other parishes that I've never visited.
Well, it's a parish like no other.
Yes, 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 yes. We have done several shows featuring that particular parish. So tell me how you first got the passion to write about that particular parish.
Well, as I mentioned, when I did my Fairfield book in 2005, I started looking around for other projects. I work with the folks from Sturgetown in St. Anne, which is one of Jamaica's first free villages, and we put together a web page and also a calendar. And then I also worked on another other projects in Canada with collaborators here. And we were in Jamaica around Christmas time in 2008, and the courthouse had just recently been restored, and our plans were then underway for the new courthouse, and the place seemed to be scrubbing up. And it just occurred to me, I said, boy, the history of this place is just begging to be told.
Aww.
So I started searching around for collaborators and people I could work with, and it finally fell to me to kind of put the project together. So over the last 18 months, I did the research both in Canada and in Portland, and the book was launched in early July.
Of this year. Oh, so it was just released.
Hot off the press.
Wow, that is certainly exciting. Well, I am sure that our listeners is going to want to have this book, and I certainly would like a copy. And I'm waiting for a raised hand for someone who might have identified the characters on the cover. So we'll see as we go along. We have quite a few callers, but a lot of times my callers are sort of shy. They're not raising their hands, but we'll see what happens this evening. Perhaps they're still trying to figure it out.
All right. It would be great to hear from some folks who are from Portland.
Right, right. I hope we have some Portland callers this evening,
right,
or people who know something about Portland, because I am always encouraging people to share, you know, share their information or share their ideas, because that's what this show is all about. So tell us a little bit about the people who contributed to the book.
Well, as with any book, it's a collaboration.
And
it started, of course, as I said. I mean, I would never have gone to Portland if it hadn't been for my dear wife.
Oh.
And my connection with Jamaica. That started the whole process. And then once I got involved in networking with people in Portland. There was lots of people who directed me to all corners of the parish to unearth the past. A fellow by the name of Bent Christensen, Mr. Chris, as he's known in Port Antonio. Alex Dehaney, the former president of the Chamber of Commerce. Richard Jones and his sister Mary Jones Langford. They're the brother and sister of Ken Jones, the cabinet minister from Port Antonio. Colonel Frank Lumsden from the Charlestown Maroon community. John and Marion Sutton from Sansan, who were our landlords when we stayed there and very helpful. Gordon Walker, also from Sansan, who told me so much about the history of that particular part of Portland. Dale Weston from the Errol Flynn Marina in Port Antonio. John Baker from the GJ.
The list goes on.
Lots of collaborators, lots of people who helped out, including the people from the parish library, from the National Library, from the Gleaner, the Custis. Roy Thompson was very helpful, and many more people. Also, Vivian Crawford, the head of the Institute of Jamaica, who's a Maroon, was very helpful in providing me guidance when I was running the chapter about the Maroons. So there's lots of people that are part of the team.
Oh, that is so wonderful. So let me ask you this. Is it more or less a historic documentation, or is it in the form of a story? Can you give us a little feel for how the book flows?
Well, it's a story of the people who left their imprints on Portland. Many of the people. I didn't include them all. I've only managed to harvest the low-hanging fruit.
I know what you mean. There is so much history.
Well, I mean, it starts with the Taino people, the original Aboriginal people from Jamaica, and as they fled from the invading Spaniards, they were joined by runaway slaves.
Right.
And they blended together to become one people who ultimately became known as the Windwards, the Windward Maroons.
Mm-hmm.
And they battled the British to a draw, signing a treaty with them in 1739. They in turn, and of course Nanny was an important part of that whole equation. With the signing of the treaty with the British, the planters, with their toxic mix of slavery and sugar and brutality, moved in. And at one point there were as many as 8,000 slaves working in plantations in Portland. With emancipation, the sugar industry in Portland died fairly quickly. It's a very tough place to make a living, particularly if you're trying to grow sugar.
Right.
Once the sugar estates were largely abandoned, small-time farmers were able to take up the land, and within a generation, they were growing banana for the export market.
Yes, we had lots of stores on those banana boats.
Yeah, and at one point, Portland was known as the banana capital of the world.
Right.
More banana being shipped out of Port Antonio than any place else in the world. And that spawned the development of the railway extension from Ewerton up to Bog Walk and then over to Port Antonio, promoted more banana and citrus and cocoa production, particularly in Portland and St. Mary. And that also spurred the development of the tourism industry.
Right. A lot of people was not aware that tourism actually started there and not in Montego Bay.
Correct.
We did a show on that one night.
Yeah. By 1897, Captain Baker had opened the first edition of the Titchfield Hotel in Titchfield Hill, which was subsequently rebuilt and stood on that site until it burned down in 1969. After the decline of banana, Portland became the center of attention for a fellow by the name of Errol Flynn.
Mm-hmm. We did a show on him too.
Right. Well, he discovered Jamaica and Portland in 1947, and spent the next 12 years of his life misbehaving in that part of Jamaica. Well, he
wow.
didn't. he didn't just miss.
Quite a guy.
Yes, he had a good time, and a lot of people had a good time with him.
Right.
And that also attracted a number of other luminaries, queens and princes and princesses and barons and captains of industry and more movie stars. And some people say the dreamers and the schemers are still coming to Portland.
Oh, really? Now, are they coming from all over the world or in mostly any particular place?
Well, they're coming from Victoria. I mean, I'm one of the dreamers
that
arrived
That's
in Portland.
Funny.
I mean, I think everybody who goes to Portland is seduced by the place.
Oh, yes, yes.
As Errol Flynn once said, it's more beautiful than any woman.
Oh, yes, and for him to say that, that's saying a lot.
I think he knew a few things about beautiful women.
That's right. But let me ask you something. What would you say is the feel of the general population in that area about retaining the history?
Well, I think it's a sleeping beast waiting to be woken up. I think that perhaps some people in Portland may not fully appreciate the incredible history that surrounds them. And my hope is that they'll appreciate this book and share some of the pride that I feel in knowing a little bit more about the colorful history of this remarkable parish.
Well, I should hope that, you know, they would have it in the library and encourage people to especially the younger generation, to really read about it and, you know, so that it can give them some pride about retaining some of that and at least being exposed to it, knowing it.
Well, there's also some really important role models for young Jamaicans in this book, people who've made a very substantial contribution to their parish and their country that people should know more about.
Right. Now, is there any ideas with the city leaders about, you know, honoring those people, I mean, within the parish? I know that, I think we have a hero from there, don't we?
Yes.
National hero?
Yes, Nanny is a...
Right. Well, is there any move on recognizing this, you know, in a educational way, especially for young people within the schools or the community?
Well, I'm an outsider. I'm just the messenger here. I hope that this book will kind of perhaps in some small way inspire people in the community and in the schools to have a closer look at the folks who came before.
Right, and the importance really of spreading the word about the things that were done during, you know, times when it was much, much harder to get anything done than it is now. So that should give them, you know, some empowerment about getting involved and retaining the history. Because one of the things that myself and some of our supporters to the backyard try to do is to encourage, you know, the whole idea of Backyard Labrador and getting together on a weekly basis is to celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica. And I'm really, you know, work like you have done really, really supports that. And I would encourage our listeners, you know, to that perhaps have family in Jamaica, whether they're in Portland or not, to get a copy of the book so that it makes a great gift for, you know, young children graduating from school or in school. So would you tell them how they would get a copy of the book?
Currently, if they go to my webpage, portlandtheotherjamaica.com, there's information there on how to order a copy. For my friends and family in Jamaica, I would ask them to be patient. I'm just working out a distribution agreement with a distributor in Kingston, and I hope to be there in October to launch the book in Jamaica.
So, oh, that's wonderful. And is that book launch going to be in all over the island or just in Portland itself?
I'm anticipating Kingston and in Portland.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Well, I hope you'll get a lot of press.
Right. And I'm hoping it'll be available in bookstores island-wide.
Right, right. And there are, of course, you know, there are so many people in diaspora all over the world, and we have people who come in and listen to the show later on. So I hope that, you know, they will really know the importance of the younger generation. Every family with a young person should have a book like that, you know, that they can share information with, talk about, because I think that's what it will take to reinforce the pride that the younger generation need to take them into adulthood. Because, you know, I think that will be good. It's good for children all over the world, but since Jamaica is such a small place and there's so much going on there now that can be distracting for the children, for the young folks, I would hope that work like yours, you know, a book like that, would make a very good gift for the families here to even buy and send to families there.
Well, and I hope it'll be a fun read.
Yes, yes, I'm sure. Well, you know, just from being in conversation with you, I have read excerpts of the book, but I am sure that it will be a very, very interesting read. Now, I'd like to invite the callers on the board, if they'd like to interact with Ken, just hit 1 on your keypad, and I'll know that you want to join the Labrish. So I'm waiting for a raised hand. If you're still trying to figure out who the people are, oh, I see a raised hand, so I'm going to be opening up the mic to 718-379. Just a minute. The mic is open. This is Margaret in the backyard. Welcome to the backyard. Who do I have and where are you calling from?
This is Lay from the Bronx, the home of the New York Yankees.
Yes, Mr. Lay from the Bronx, home of the New York Yankees. How are you?
Pretty good, pretty good.
Well, welcome to the backyard.
Yes, I wanted to know if we in the Bronx would be able to go into a bookstore and get this book.
At this point, it's available on my webpage for readers in North America.
Okay.
And
so do you ship to the U.S.?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Well, we will do that.
All right.
I did go on the web, by the way, and I was only able to identify two of the characters.
Well, that's a start.
Well, you have to keep working on it.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell us what two you identified?
Well, of course, Errol Flynn, and the other one was, I think, Bogle.
Oh, you Bogle?
No,
okay.
No, Paul Bogle.
What about the female?
I wasn't able to identify her.
All right.
Oh, I got you. Okay. Well, I got her, but I didn't get Bogle. So I suppose we're sort of even.
Hey, so give me back mine.
Well, I'm not telling you mine.
So,
now, did you have any questions for Ken?
Well, no, I found the conversation quite interesting, and I'm now curious to gobble up the fun part of this book.
All right. Have you got a favorite place in Portland?
I'm sorry?
Do you have a favorite place in Portland?
Well, as a child, I used to go up to Boston Beach for picnics. However, that was when I don't know if the prickly pears, you know, those creatures that wash up on the beach and stick you, what do you call them? Sea anemones?
Right, yes.
Yeah, right. The beach was infested with those things in those days.
Oh, dear.
What year
and,
are we?
I imagine from some of the pictures I saw on your website, it's quite different now.
Well, I think it is. I, to be honest with you, I haven't been down to the beach there for some time, but I certainly know that the people at Boston make some of the best jerk in Jamaica.
Certainly do. Yeah.
Boston jerk, huh?
Yeah, the whole jerk.
Yeah, and a little further on in Port Antonio, is, that could be the heart of the jerk industry there, right?
Yes,
right in Port Antonio.
Yes, certainly the Maroons used to come down from the Rio Grande Valley, and they would sell their jerk in Musgrave Market.
Yeah, yeah.
What on West Street there?
Oh, I'm. You know, strangely enough, I've been to Port Antonio several times, and in some secluded areas that you would not believe existed, because it's covered with shrubbery,
right?
Trees and all, until you get into those hillside mansions, as a matter of fact.
Right.
I am. I just only recently passed by the Titchfield Hotel area.
Right.
And but I am more familiar with other parts of the island than I am with Port Antonio.
Okay.
How long did it take you to put the book together, Ken?
About 18 months.
18 months. And what would you say was your favorite part of the project itself?
Well, I'm always interested in the hunt, always hunting for all the little details and tidbits and things that go together to make a great story. And I must say, one of the most helpful resources that I had, this was just an unbelievable gift to me, was the Daily Gleaner have taken all of their old newspapers and put it on the web. And you can subscribe to their archives, and you can search their archives, and you can go back, in some cases, as far as 1834, and you can pull things off of their web page that just really help in the whole process of patching together the various stories. Like I found that source really helpful when I was doing the story, the chapter which I called The American Invasion, which was started in the spring of 1898 with the Spanish-American War. The Americans were trying to drive the Spanish out of Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
And as it turns out, Port Antonio became a major depot for the U.S. Navy as they marshaled their forces to prepare for the attack on Santiago de Cuba. So for about 3 or 4 months, Port Antonio was overrun with American sailors.
Wow. Well, I wonder if in those days there was not planted. It's not during the plantation days. That's before that, right?
This was the banana days.
It was the banana days. Yes. So I'm wondering if they were eating bananas.
Yes.
So did you spend a lot of time in Jamaica during the time you were writing this book?
We spent 2 months living in Portland last winter while I did on-the-ground research interviewing people.
I've got you. Interesting. And do you plan to write about other parishes?
Oh, no. This will be my last book.
Oh, last book period or last book about Jamaica?
I said that last time when I did my Fairfield book. I said, that's it. That's enough. No more books.
I would
like to hope that this book would encourage other people to do more research and more writing on the history of Portland, because there's so much more to tell.
Right, I know. That's exactly how I feel. When I did the segment on Discover Jamaica, one parish at a time, one show was never enough to talk about a particular parish. You know, the fruits, why it was named. It was just so much information and very interesting information. And I just believe that if more young Jamaicans knew the rich history that is there just waiting for them to discover and enjoy, they would take a lot more pride in preservation, you know, in preserving some of the memories, the history, the everything. But what I wanted to ask you was there any visual things, any place in Port Antonio that would that was from any of those days, any forts or, you know, places of interest that were still visible?
Well, I would say the one that I find most intriguing, both in terms of its history, but also the historic photographs that I was able to collect, is Folly Mansion.
Oh, yes, we did a show on that, too.
Right. And I was able to make contact with one of the great-great-grandsons of the original owners, and he had some gorgeous pictures of Folly Mansion back from 1905, including interior shots. That I was able to include in the book, and they're in my mind they're gems. They're just remarkable to see how the elite lived in Jamaica in 1905.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I would really love to. I think I found one of his pictures online.
Yes, the photograph of his family sitting in the front.
Right. So we put it on the website.
Right.
But I was just so intrigued with that story.
Right.
And I think it's a little known story. Most people don't know about it.
Well, and as you said in your previous program, they know little about it, and what they do know about it seems to be a lot of mythology.
That's right. You know how things can get started.
Right.
And it just evolves, you know, it goes on and on. But I was so excited when I discovered it. So are you going, do you have a date that you're going down to Jamaica for the launch?
Yeah, I should mention one thing before we go to that, and that is the chapter I did on Folly Mansion was actually authored by Marguerite Garon, a good friend from Port Antonio. She's a resident of Jamaica and a journalist with the Jamaican Observer and RJR. She penned that particular chapter. She had done research on it, and I was able to research and get the photographs to go with it. So, again, as always, books are teamwork.
Right. Great. Great.
I'm anticipating being in Portland by the middle of October. The book will then be available in country.
Well, perhaps we can have you on again just before you go can, you know, remind our listeners about the, you know, getting a copy of the book and the significance of having the book, you know, in their homes, especially
right.
if they're young, the next generation. Because I think as seniors, you know, we have a responsibility to, as much as we can, reinforce the pride of being a Jamaican, whether you live or plan to go back to Jamaica or not. So I would encourage my listeners all over the world to get a copy, because this is authentic information in a very relaxed and fun way, as you say, to learn about things of the past.
I think my hope was that this is not sort of dry facts and figures. This is this will hopefully bring a little bit of Portland's history to life, and in a way that will be accessible to many, many people.
And so, and we can make a special call out to the people from Portland that are living abroad. to really check it out and be sure that they spread the word, because, you know, the relatives are usually in different states, in different countries, but one can tell the other. I want to remind our
listeners. And see if you can identify those six characters on the front cover.
Not yet. I don't see. We have quite a few callers, but I don't see any hands raised. So I think we've stumped them. That's how much we know about our history. But I want to remind our callers, our listeners, that you're listening to Backyard Labrish on Blog Talk Radio. We're here each Wednesday at 8 o'clock, where we celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love. And we're really honored this evening to have some enlightenment by our author, Ken, who is a Canadian who is in love with Jamaica in many ways because he has a Jamaican wife. Of how long have you been married, Ken?
35 years.
Wow. Do you have children?
Yes, we do. We have a daughter, yeah.
Oh. And is your daughter residing in Canada?
Canada, although she was married in Jamaica.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful. So does she love Portland, too?
Well, the last time she was there, she was a little girl. We first took her to Portland in 1978, and I have a picture of her and Hyacinth on the front porch of the De Montevan Inn.
Wow.
When back in the day, and then about 10 years later, we went back and stayed at the same guest house and took another picture of the two of them on the front porch.
Oh, that is so precious. And, you know, as people get older, they realize how wonderful those memories are.
Hmm.
And I always encourage my listeners, especially the senior members of the diaspora, to be sure that they're utilizing the new technology and get their photographs, you know, digitalized and be online, because, you know, that's the way of the future. And I was the victim of a fire in my house burnt down 2 years ago.
Oh, dear.
Or a little more than 2 years ago. So I know the value, you know, of having the pictures online and being involved with the new technology, because a lot of times my generation tend to be a little intimidated by the internet and being online and the computers. But, you know, we need to embrace it because it is the future, and our grandchildren are going to be using the internet and a computer to access their information.
Yes.
So we do need to make sure that we're part of that and we can remain in their lives in some way. Because I keep reminding our listeners that once you're on Blog Talk Radio and in the backyard in joining in this labrish, the shows are archived on the Blog Talk's website, and people will always be able to click and hear your voice.
And also, encourage your older listeners to talk to their grandchildren, because their grandchildren are the ones that really understand the technology. And if they can share their stories with their grandchildren, then maybe their grandchildren can help them feel a little less intimidated about the technology and work towards putting some of those stories in writing and in photographs and make sure they're preserved.
Oh, that is a wonderful suggestion. So I hope that our listeners will really, you know, take the bait and take the plunge, because I keep reminding them that I'm a senior, and I am embracing it. I am sometimes like a kid in a candy store when I discover something new, even if it's a new widget or gadget that has to do with technology. So I also would like to ask our listeners to share the shows with people they know that love Jamaica, or just hear Ken is a Canadian And he loves Jamaica. He's a fan of Jamaica. People have friends that are fans of Jamaica. So, you know, we can share information with them about our culture and our past, especially if they love history. And this is a wonderful way to interact and participate. So, Ken, I am so grateful that you discovered us and was gracious enough to visit us in the backyard. Do you have a favorite thing that you do when you go to Jamaica? You know, some people go home for the mangoes. Some people can't wait to get the ackee and saltfish. Some people can't wait to get to the beach. I heard one foreigner describe Jamaica as one big tranquilizer. So what is your favorite?
Well, one place that we always spend a few days when we first arrive, as I say, I need to get acclimatized. You know, I behave as a Canadian, and when I go to Jamaica, I have to tune it down a bit. So we usually spend a few days in the same place where we spent our honeymoon. Yeah, that's Negril.
Oh, very romantic.
Yeah, Negril is a tourist destination that's quite different than Ochi or Montego Bay or other places. It's a nice place to go for a few days.
So that's your favorite place?
I think so. And then my favorite other than that was probably ackee, saltfish, and some boiled banana with some hot pepper for breakfast.
Green bananas for breakfast.
Absolutely.
Oh, well, having a foreigner eat that is something special because, you know, your breakfast is usually a lot lighter than boiled green bananas.
Well, that breakfast will keep you going all day.
Oh, yes, that's right. And breakfast is the most important meal of the day.
Indeed.
So when I think back, I remember how we would, as growing up as kids, we would have a real big breakfast, you know, with so many different parts to it.
Yes.
And now I know we were on the right track.
Yep.
So, anyway, Leigh, do you have some parting words for our author?
Well, I'd just like the author, Ken, to pronounce his last name for me.
Right.
Yes, me too.
It's pronounced Rouche.
Rouche.
Yes.
Is it French?
Well, I tell people that used to be French, it's now Canadian.
Well, it's French-Canadian, I guess. Do you know where your ancestors were from?
Well, they homesteaded in North Carolina in about 1825. They came from Alsace-Lorraine, which is on the French-German border, and then made their way across the continent and ended up in Utah and Wyoming.
Oh, wow.
And then homesteaded again in Alberta in Canada, where my father was born. He was the first in their family to be born in Canada.
Mm. Oh, my goodness. And do you have other siblings?
I have a brother, yes.
Uh-huh. So you have family in Canada. And does your wife have family in Jamaica?
Yes. Oh, yes. We always visit her auntie in Glasgow up above Brownstown. And she has two sisters in Port Moore.
Yes, so you have dual citizenship.
Well, in spirit, yes.
Yes, that's what I meant, yes.
More question, if you don't mind.
Sure.
When you launch in Jamaica, do you have a location for the Kingston launch?
I don't yet. I'm talking to a distributor there. I'm guessing at this point it'll probably be one of the main bookstores in the New Kingston area.
Okay. We would like to know that because I would send a bunch of my friends over.
All right. If you can send if you order the book, I'll have your email and I can alert you to that. Like I said,
all right.
It'll probably be mid-October, I'm guessing.
What month did you, mid-October? Well, perhaps, Ken, even if you're not our exclusive guest for the evening, just before you go, if you would come visit us in the backyard anytime, please.
Yes.
But, you know, and remind us that the about the launch.
Yes.
Because this is an important event, and I think it's an important book.
Yes. Well, thank you. Yeah, no, it's, to me it was important to do a printing in Jamaica because it's not practical to send books by airmail from Canada to Jamaica. It's
right, because you have those services down there that do very well. So I agree with that. So with that said, I want to really thank you for sharing with us. I want to thank you for your passion about history and about selecting Portland, Jamaica, to write about. And I am hoping, I don't think it will be your last book.
We'll see.
And I want to invite you to come back to the backyard whenever you feel like. And, you know, we pretend we're in our favorite chairs, experiencing the trade winds blowing across our face. Do you remember feeling those? They come up at when I was growing up, they would come up at a certain time in the evening. I don't know if the weather pattern has changed, but the evenings seem to cool down and the winds start blowing across your face. I loved it.
A little bit of natural air conditioning.
Right, 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 right. So are you a beach person?
Oh, yes.
Ah, so do you get tanned very easily? Oh, so you have to really put on the lotion, the block, when you go down there.
Yes.
And do you eat jerk?
Oh, of course. Oh, yes. In fact, I'm making some jerk chicken for dinner.
Oh, you're making?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, wonderful. Well, do give my regards to your wife and daughter.
All right.
And it was a pleasure having you on the show. And I must say that you are the first foreigner in love with Jamaica as our guest. We have had a couple of authors and quite a few people. We have people telling stories about growing up in Jamaica, and we've interviewed some important people. However, and I would ask you that if you encounter any Jamaicans that have a story, because what we're trying to do here is to build a data bank of stories of growing up in Jamaica before independence, because there's not a lot of real documentation about, you know, how we socialized, what went on, that is available. So I am encouraging people to make the stories, you know, tell their stories in the backyard so that other people can know what life was like.
Well, there's one, I'm sure there's many ideas I can come up with, but one that immediately occurs to me, one of my favorite chapters in my book is called Sister Mavis Gordon. And
mm-hmm.
If you look at that, this is a lady who grew up in Moortown, the Maroon town in the Rio Grande Valley in the 1930s. And she tells this delightful story of what life was like in this little tiny village in the 1930s in Portland.
Oh, isn't that wonderful? You know, I think stories are so great. And in every story, there are so many nuggets of wisdom, so many things that applies to now.
Yep.
And the next generation can get so much wisdom from them. You know, it's just important, I think, for the seniors to share their stories. Sometimes they don't think it's important, and they don't think the kids are listening.
Sometimes they don't know what they know.
Right, right. Or they just don't think that it's important.
Right.
But it is so precious, and I'm always trying to extract it from them. So, again, we thank you for being our guest. Best of luck with the book, and we'll be doing our best to let people know about it.
All right. Thank
you. All right, Ken. So good night, and thank you for being here.
All right.
All righty.
Good night.
Miss today from the Bronx.
All right. Go Yankees.
yes. Right, right.
And do let us know about the launch.
All right, I will.
And I encourage, would you give the website out again so our listeners can, that may have just come online, can know where to go?
www.portlandtheotherjamaica.com.
Okay. And the launch is scheduled for September?
No, mid-October in Jamaica.
October in Jamaica. We'll be looking forward to that.
All right. In the meantime, it's available on the web for folks in North America.
Very good. Thank you so much, and we hope that you'll come back. As we say in Jamaica, walk good and
right.
Back soon.
Okay.
All righty.
Thank you.
My pleasure having you.
Okay.
Good night. Well,
bye.
Thanks to all our callers and those listening online. We always appreciate you, and I'm just so grateful for your support. So, as I say each week, make it a great, great week, and we'll see you next time. Bye. Bye, Mr. Lay.
Bye.
Bye to all the callers on the board that are not raising your hands, but we love you anyhow. And please spread the word. Good night.